that this is old home week and that everybody is glad to see everybody here. Well, we should get started because we do have some business to attend to, a big part of which is to honor our retirees this evening. Before we get started on report out from our closed session, I'd like to just take a point of personal privilege. And where is he? I'd like to recognize retired board member, Mr. Ted Wheeler. Ted! Just couldn't stay away, could you, Ted? So welcome, everybody. The board did meet in closed session. We discussed three items: anticipated litigation, the superintendent's evaluation, and personnel assignments. There was no action taken in closed session. Shall we move on to the approval of the minutes, please? We have two sets of minutes, one for May 8th, 2012. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I'll move to accept those minutes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the minutes of May 8th. Is there anybody from the floor, from the public, that would like to address us? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members? Seeing none other than abstention, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. It carries 5-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to the minutes of May 22nd. Would somebody like to make a motion on the minutes of May 22nd?
I move approval, but I want to make a comment.
Sure, absolutely. So we have a motion and a second. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on the minutes of Tuesday, May 22nd? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Quisenberry.
This is not a correction. This is a I misspoke last meeting. I went to a meeting that was sponsored by the Parent Project and not Parent Participation, and I was corrected and reminded to, you know, speak more carefully in the future. I do want to mention, though, that my daughter and my new grandson are involved in parent participation through adult ed, and my daughter loves it. And I think my grandson likes it, too.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Mr. Malarwas. Okay, we'll move on to item 4.01, student representatives to the board. We only have one. We have somebody who's sitting in for Tessa tonight, Mackenzie Hathaway.
Hello, my name is Mackenzie, and I'm in the ASB class. And so we have a couple things that Slow High had the last couple of weeks. On the 23rd, we had our Tiger Fest, and that was where it was the Golden Tiger, the Athletic Awards, and the Open House. And it was all in one, and we had about 1,000 people there. So the teachers came out. There were different booths. There was math and science, athletics. The band performed. The theater performed. The jazz band performed. We had a barbecue. It was really great. And we are planning to have it again next year on May 22nd. And then we had our 24-hour relay the next day, it was the 24th and 25th, and I was just one of the student coordinators, and that went really well. It was a great success. It was against drug and alcohol abuse for underage drinking and driving. And then we have our senior picnic, which is this Friday, the 8th at Cuesta Park, and that's for most of the seniors. They paid $35, and it's just a great way for the seniors to get together, one of the last hurrahs. And then we have our showcase on the 14th, which is at the Performing Arts Center at 7 o'clock. And all are welcome, and it's free of charge, and so that's where the seniors perform. And then on graduation is the 15th, and it starts at 4:30.
Yeah. Great, thank you. And I don't know if I wasn't listening well, but isn't there a music performance this Thursday night at the Baptist Church over here on Johnson Avenue? Maybe you didn't know that.
I am not aware of
that. Yes, there is the, my understanding, is that correct, Mr. O'Connor? That's right. There is the San Luis High School music concert over here at the Baptist Church right by French Hospital. Okay. So I think everybody was welcome. Thank you very much, Mackenzie. Now, what we tell everybody is you're welcome to stay. We value your input. But we also understand that you've probably got a lot of work to do, and if you'd like to leave, that's fine, too.
I'll stay for a little bit.
Great. Thank you. Okay. The next part is very fun. Sad, but fun. And that is the presentation of the retiring employees. Mr. Pinkerton.
Right here in front of your seats, if you can. I think it'd be nice. I probably, you know, one of my tasks this year with our early retirement incentive was to get CalPERS out here in CalSTRS, and I might have done too good a job of getting that information out to the employees because it, as you can tell, 62 certificated and classified retirees that we're going to be celebrating tonight. So, okay, so if the retirees can just come on up. We'll start over on this end, come around, and we'll have you guys all stay. So the first retiree is Pam Alford, 27 years from Monarch Grove. And the book that was donated on her behalf is Somebody and the Three Blairs. And that will be donated to Monarch Grove. Not all the retirees are going to be here tonight, so if they're not here, I'm going to go through the names, and those that are here, please come forward. Bruce Bedrigian tonight. 33 years, San Luis Coastal, Morro Bay High School, and Rain of Gold is the book that will be donated to Morro Bay High. Susan Blaney, 27 years. Hawthorne EL, and her book is Coco's Kitten, donated to Hawthorne. Next retiree is Mark Bender, 26 years. San Luis Obispo High School, and the book that will be donated on his behalf is called Fierce Heart, The Story of Makaha and the Soul of Hawaiian Surfing. And that'll be donated to Slohai, and if you know Mr. Bender, you'll know why. The next retiree is Naomi Blakely, 37 years. Student Support Services. And the book that will be donated to Los Ranchos is The Art of Miss Chu. The next retiree is Sue Borchert, 21 years, Instructional Services. And the book that will be donated, Sinsheimer Elementary School, is Blubber by Judy Bloom. Laura Brewer, 36 years, Morro Bay High School. Her book is Bitter Blue by Keshore. And that will be donated to Morro Bay High. The next retiree is Dan Brown, 32 years from our maintenance department. And the book on his behalf is called Jeremy Fink and the Meaning of Life, and that will be donated to the IMC. The next retiree is Ginny Carr, 27 years, Hawthorne. And her book is Sylvester and the Magic Pebble. That will be donated to Hawthorne. The next retiree is Carrie Cerrone, 27 years, Pathpoint. Her book is About Hummingbirds, A Guide for Children, will be donated to the IMC. Ruth Cobb, 29 years, in the Fiscal Services Department. And Ruth's book is called Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and will be donated to the Lambs. Marcia Coriel. Six years in San Luis Coastal. The rest was with the county and from C.L. Smith. And her book is called Golden Egg. Jeff Becker, 32 years, Los Osos Middle School. His book is Eyewitness to the Civil War. And that will be donated to Los Osos Middle School. Jane DeVincenzi, 23 years, Student Support Services. Her book is Amazing Faces and will be donated to Baywood. Jerry Dunlap, 15 years, Los Osos Middle School. His book is The Best Instructional Guide Ever, The Ultimate Guide to Improving Your Game and Shooting Low Scores. He's a golfer. Vic Eklund, 25 years, San Luis Obispo High School. His book is Mavericks, The Story of Big Wave Surfing. Dana Epperheimer, 17 years, Los Osos Middle School. And her book is Ballet, and it'll be donated to Los Osos Middle School. Gary Etheridge, 25 years, San Luis Obispo High School. His book is Highway 61 Revisited, The Tangled Roots of American Jazz, Blues, Rock, and Country Music. Debbie Farmer, 36 years, Los Ranchos. Her book is Alexander and the Wind-Up Mouse. Denise Gello, 16 years, Transportation. Each adult school. His book is Same Sun Here, and it'll be donated to the IMC. Francis Hallwood, 22 years, Monarch Grove. Her book is La Mariposa, and it'll be donated to Monarch Grove. John Horn, 26 years, Morro Bay High School. And his book is called Team of Rivals. Joyce Hunter, 28 years, Sinsheimer Elementary School. Her book is also Art of Miss Chu and will be donated to Sinsheimer. Doug Jennison, and it has now 20 plus years. Baywood Elementary School. And his book is Mr. Lincoln's Way. Cecil Johnson, 21 years, C.L. Smith. His book is by the Great Horn Spoon, and it'll be donated to C.L. Smith. Ruby Klatt, 27 years, Los Ranchos. Her book is Henry and Mudge Under the Yellow Moon. Gene Kroger, 29 years, Sinsheimer. Fletcher and the Falling Leaves will be donated to Sinsheimer. Diane Lehman, 16 years, Del Mar. Her book is also Art of Miss Chu and will be donated to Del Mar. Debbie Lott, 19 years, Student Support Services. Her book is Lions of Little Rock and will be donated to the IMC. Tina Lucas, 29 years, Instructional Services. Tina's book is called I Love You, the Purplest. And it will be donated to Baywood. Grace Manderscheid, 38 years, C.L. Smith. Her book is probably the toughest to pronounce, but I hope I get it right. Strega Nona's Gift. And that will be donated to C.L. Smith on her behalf. Cheryl McLean, 25 years, Monarch Grove. Animals Born Alive and Well will be her book, and it'll be donated to Monarch Grove. Rosalind McQuaid, 19 years, Student Support Services. Rosalind's book is Our Bodies, Ourselves, A New Edition for a New Era, will be donated to SLO High School. Marlene Mendez, 28 years, San Luis Obispo High School. Her book is Wonder Girl, The Magnificent Sporting Life of Babe Dirksen. You get the idea. San Luis High School. Sandy Meredith, 40 years. C.L. Smith. Our top retiree. And her book is Little Squeegee Bug. It will be at C.L. Smith. Linda Meyer, 38 years, Bishop's Peak Teach. And that is Miss Bindergarten Celebrates the Last Day of Kindergarten. Sonia Murphy, 23 years, food services. Her book, Food is Foe, Nutrition and Eating Disorders, will be donated to Laguna Middle School. Suzanne Nichols, 26 years, Hawthorne. Suzanne's book is going to be Hot Shots and will be donated to Hawthorne. Lucinda Nichols, 12 years, Casa de Vida. Her book is Zero, and it will be donated to the IMC. Christine Nunn, 19 years, Monarch Grove. Christine's book is Fletcher and the Falling Leaves, and will be donated to Monarch Grove. Ilsa Outcult, 16 years, Superintendent's Office. And her book is Titanic, Voices from the Disaster, and will be donated to the IMC. Linda Pax, 27 years, Los Ranchos. Her book is Zero by Atoshi, will be donated to Los Ranchos. Al Pena, 22 years, Morro Bay High School. Sharon's book is Nutrition and Disease Prevention, will be donated to Laguna Middle School. Leslie Thompson, 27 years, Los Osos Middle School. Loving Will Shakespeare is her book and will be donated to Los Osos Middle School. Sue Thorson, 23 years, food service. And Sue's book is Little House Cookbook and will be donated to Bishop's Peak Teach. Jean Usselton, 29 years, Baywood. Jean's book is Miss Bindergarten Celebrates the Last Day of Kindergarten, will be donated to Baywood. Jim Vager, 37 years, San Luis Obispo High School. Jim's book is Force of Nature, Mind, Body, Soul, and, of course, Surfing. And that'll be donated to Slow High. Carla Von Zup, 21 years, Path Point. Carla's book is Alfred Noble, The Man Behind the Peace Prize, and will be donated to the IMC. Bruce Webster, 23 years, Maintenance. And his book is Revenge of the Dino Trucks, and will be donated to the IMC. Joanne White, 12 years, San Luis Obispo High School. Joanne's book is Widow Play, and will be donated to Slow High. Aloha Windsor, 11 years, San Luis Obispo High School. Her book is Teens in France by Nikki Krantz, and will be donated to Slow High. Val Wright, 35 years, Laguna Middle School. Val's book is Soul Surfer, and will be donated to Los Osos Middle School. And then last but not least, Elaine Yeo, 25 years, Monarch Grove, Music. And Elaine's book is Ballet for Martha, Making Appalachian Spring, will be donated to Monarch Grove. So the board can have a seat. So one of the things that I did for us tonight and for everyone to watch, and probably better that you get to take a seat anyways instead of standing up here with me, but that's okay. I put together a quick slideshow. What I asked the employees, to each of the retirees, to kind of put together was either a picture of something that they want to do after retirement, a picture of them with their family, or a picture from school with their kids, their class, something like that. So we'll go ahead and watch that really quick, and then I'll have a few more things to let you know.
gift you've given me, I'll carry it with me. Help me hear the music of my heart. Help me hear the music of my heart. You opened my eyes, you opened the door to something I never known before. And your love is the music of my heart.
So it's nice. I'm going to shoot this out to everybody tomorrow, my personnel newsletter, so they can take a look at the PowerPoint, hopefully, and share it. And so what the 62 retirees that came before us, and, you know, not all of them tonight, but hopefully they'll get to witness and watch all of us clapping on air, represent 1,584 years of service to the San Luis Coastal School District. So they've all made a powerful impact on the lives of our students, you know, and even I think Sandy Meredith was our 40 years, right, for the past 40 years. And so it's kind of one of those times where it's hard, I'm sure, for a lot of people in terms of letting go, and especially the friendships that are made. You know, the job part aside, it's the friendships that are special to everybody here. And I know back at all the school sites that they'll miss yet. From everybody that I talk to who's retired, my mother included, it's the best time of their life, right? And so it can also be a great thing with your grandkids, with your kids and family and friends. And so I wish everyone great health and to have a wonderful retirement. I would be remiss without thanking a few people, and that would be Debbie Juergens for helping with the refreshments and the calling everybody and notifying them about everything. So, Debbie, thank you very much. In the back. Also, Sharon Hopp, who put together all of the books for each of the employees, the beautiful table in the back, all the books that represent each employee. So, Sharon, thank you very much. And also a thank you to Emilia Simoes for helping me put together our slideshow presentation today. So, Emilia, thank you very much as well. And so we're going to, I do want to introduce our two new principals to the district before we do it, but one last, please, round of applause for our retirees tonight. Thank you. So before we get started with our cake and refreshments, I would like our two new principals to come forward, please, Mr. Jeff Martin and Jennifer Dinelli. Jeff comes to us from our district just to the south of us and is currently the elementary principal at Grover Heights. And so he'll be taking over at Sinsheimer Elementary School. And so I've known Jeff for many years, and he actually is a SLO native. So he went to elementary school here in San Luis, went to junior high, as well as San Luis Obispo High School. So kind of coming back home. So it's great to have him on board. The other new principal is Jennifer Dinelli, who's next to me here and taking over at Baywood. She's currently at Baywood, is kind of almost an assistant principal, TOSA on assignment, helping out with special education. But beyond that was just the instructional background that she brings to the job is going to be a great gift. And no offense to Doug, who's here tonight. We love Doug. But Jennifer will be another added boost to Baywood, and so I think she's going to do a great job as well. So I just wanted to introduce both of them to the board tonight.
Is there any board member that would like to make any comments at this time? Mrs. Sheffer.
I see some familiar faces out there, and I just wanted to...
Members, could you come on up to the front? We'll get the meeting started again. Mr.
We're going to see you at
graduation. Test.
I see Mr. Quisenberry is slowly making his way up here, and we're looking for Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Oh, we do.
And Mr. Millar. She's running. We're giving her the... She's taking the board fitness exam. Okay. You know what? I think we should. I'd like to also recognize Mrs. Devitt, who's here. Yay. We missed ya. I'm glad you said 1965. I thought at first you were going to say 1695. I was going to say no.
Oh, Chris.
What? No, I oh my gosh. Well, we're glad you're here and we miss you. So thank you for coming.
Yeah. Chris, may I catch someone
of
before
course.
They walk out?
Oh,
door?
Yeah.
Jean, who's standing by the door back there, we acknowledge that she has 29 years of service, and she actually has 39 years of service to the district.
Nice.
Okay. So we'll move on to correspondence. The board did not receive any correspondence. And then let's go to public comment. Mr. Buckman.
We have one request for public comment from Richard Margiston. Markitson. Yes, that's what I wrote down, and I read it wrong. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Richard Margiston, before this board, a number of meetings ago, there was a water recycle contract for the four schools in Los Osos that you unanimously approved. I just came tonight to show my appreciation for the proactive nature that the board took after that meeting. Mr. Quisenberry and Ms. Rogers attended CSD meeting last month. Some other issues were brought to their attention about consumption levels at the schools and stuff, and it's my understanding as of sometime this week some of those issues are in the process of being addressed. I appreciate the proactive, you know, move that the board took, or operations, or whoever was responsible. And then I just wanted to, the CSD has still not adopted a rate structure for the upcoming year. But I wanted to bring a piece of information to the board that you might want to keep in the back of your minds for when this contract is renewed, possibly in 5 years. At this point, signing this contract with these locked-in rates, Baywood Elementary and the middle school, you'll be paying approximately $1,850 an acre foot for irrigation water, for the recycled water. The two other schools work out to about $1,500 as volunteering. And I have a personal interaction with one of your board members who, after he retired, started volunteering for people helping people in Los Osos at the food distribution. We found him so valuable that we made him a board member, and he is now in charge of the food distribution on Wednesday morning every week. Very valuable to us. We don't want to lose him. So we appreciate that. I know everybody on the board has other issues that they're interested in and volunteer for, but I just wanted to mention the one I know. And he's also a great bell ringer in December for the Salvation Army that we're in charge of the bell ringers for Los Osos. But Jim, I thought I had, but Jim. So don't keep him too late tonight, because he's got to get up early and move boxes and unload trucks in the morning. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Marcus. Okay. Let's move on to item number 7.01, status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Not a whole lot new to report. The budget for the state of California remains focused on the initiatives, the two of them, one being Governor Brown's initiative to increase sales tax and income tax on the wealthy, and the other one is, what's the name? I forgot her name.
Molly Munger
initiative. The PTA initiative. Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Of course, it's the PTA. What are you talking about, Molly Munger? Anyway, the PTA initiative also is a tax on the wealthy, and we'll see how it all turns out. It's coming down to some interesting campaigns and interesting outcomes, but we don't have any new news about the state of California's budget at this point.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to item number 7. I'm sorry, is there anybody that has any questions for Mr. Miller? Okay, let's move on to item number 7.02, DLAC recommendations. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, Board. Each year, it's my duty to share the
District English Language Advisory Council, or DLAC, their recommendations to the Board of Education, as communicated on May 3rd, 2012, and I'd like to share these recommendations with you. So in response to the school-level ELAC, or English Language Advisory Council, needs assessment results, the DLAC makes the following recommendations to the Board of Education. A, a complete focused summer school program at each site. B, support for kindergarten students with transportation, childcare, and a longer school day. C, time for teachers to collaborate across grade levels in planning for ELD instruction and differentiation, particularly with the increasing enrollment of students with larger gaps in their education. D, an ELD scope and sequence grades kindergarten through sixth. E, an ELD shared drive on the computer system, on the network. F, more books for guided reading lessons, where vocabulary and grammar can be used from these texts. G, improved reclassification process at the school level. And H, provide parent education workshops for parents of English learners at each school. And in response to the proposed budget cuts that we enacted or at least approved last board meeting, the DLAC would like to make the following recommendations, which we heard at our last board meeting, but I'll just repeat. A, do not reduce the EL specialist positions, but do change the model of service delivery to English learners. And B, provide support for teachers to ensure implementation of effective instructional strategies for English learners. What I would like to add to this is that I can tell you for in large measure, most if not all of these are things that we're actively pursuing, we're actively engaged in, and I think are in alignment with our stated objectives within the initiatives.
Dr. Prater, I just have a question. On the shared drive, was this something that was for the student access or parent access?
It's my understanding that the if you look at the prior one, in D it says an English language development or ELD scope and sequence grades K to 6 speaks to what I believe is information that is covered in the classroom that teachers can share. So okay. That would be what we would call on our W drive right. In our district, that all teachers would have access to the scope and sequence to make sure that they're in the same alignment as everyone else.
Thank you.
Other questions for Dr. Prater? Okay, thank you, Dr. Prater. And a second by Mrs. Sheffer for motion resolution 20-11-12. Is there any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Passes 6-0.
Let's move on then to item number 9.01, adoption of the 2012-2013 budget. Mr. Miller and Mrs. Lang.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The budget that we have presented to you tonight in your packet that you have is a result of the discussions that we've held over the last three board meetings and for the last several months with different interest groups. Essentially, the report focuses that you have in your hands, the report focuses on the general fund, although there are summaries for each of the other funds. And we have made various assumptions, which I think it's kind of important for everybody to hear, at least to record and put out there to the public. The budget assumptions that we have used involve enrollment and average daily attendance. So in 11-12, the student enrollment increased to 7,350. That was an increase of 80 students. We are estimating a 2012 enrollment to be 7,440, an increase of 90 from the 11-12. The average daily attendance in 11-12 was 6,906, which is up 152. The staffing that we have utilized for this budget is the same staffing formula we used in the current year we're in, 11-12. Mr. Millar.
I just
and the difference is that we are going to hold closer, hew more closely to the
yes.
than at times in the past.
Yes. Okay. In 11-12, this current year that we're in, we were very generous in our vision of what a classroom should look like, so that if there was some awkward combination potentials or there were some awkward numbers, then we were more liberal with the assignment of an additional classroom and teacher. Obviously, with the budget situation as exists, a $5 million cut in expenditures, we're not going to be able to do that in 12-13. Additional assumptions that we have made relate to revenue. So our tax revenue, which we get 100% of our revenue from local property taxes, was basically flatlined. If we were a revenue limit district, our revenue limit would have been $6,705 per ADA with a deficit factor of 22.2%, which would have given us a funded revenue limit of $5,212. As a basic aid district, the funding from property taxes is projected to be $7,897. That would be an increase above our revenue limit of about $2,700. Contracts with other districts for San Luis Coastal Special Ed Services are budgeted at $560,000. That's a known amount at this moment. State categorical programs were adjusted for were not adjusted because the COLA is a 0%, and there were various expenditure assumptions based upon statutory payroll costs, benefits, and other things related to our payroll. Up on the screen for your purview is what I call the general fund summary, and in 2012-2013. Our total revenues will be $69,821, with total expenses $76 million. Our revenue over expense is our expenses over revenue is $6.5 million. We have a transfer in of $1.4 million. That transfer comes from the GASB 45 Fund 20 that will be utilized to pay our retirees' health benefits in 2012-13. And so we have a net decrease in our fund balance of $5,033,000. We anticipate having a beginning fund balance of $17,500,000, and if everything were to go according to our projections that we have estimated at this moment in time, we would end the 12-13 school year with $12,500,000 in the bank. Now, I'll tell you the truth. Much of what we're doing here is guesswork, and what we end up with at the end of 12-13, if it's anything close to $12,500,000, I will be very surprised.
Can I jump in with a question?
Sure, go ahead.
So this transfer in that relates to employee health benefits,
yes.
Is that the mechanism we use to take fund transfer in from GASB 20?
Correct.
So every year, actuarially, you will determine
that you're going to be approving, hopefully, here tonight, is a multi-year projection, which is a three-year projection of the financial condition of the district 2012-13, 2013-14, and 2014-15. And I put up 2013-14 on the board to illustrate something to you about our work to be done next year. And what you see up there is essentially a balanced budget. It has a $1 million deficit in it. The sixth column, the sixth row down, has a $920,000 deficit attached to it. And what I've done is I've assumed certain cuts that would take place in the 13-14 budget. They amount to almost $5 million, and by cutting $5 to $6 million, we will be able to achieve a balanced budget in 13-14. That's going to be essential in order to avoid a qualified budget situation in 13-14 or 14-15. So we've hit the precipice in the sense that we're going to have to continue the same budget situations we encountered this year next year in order to take care of that potential problem.
So this is this assuming the governor's the governor's tax proposal passes?
It does. It assumes that there will not be any additional state takeaways from basic aid districts, and it also assumes that basic aid districts continue in existence.
Right now, is it my understanding that if the governor's tax proposal doesn't pass, that we'd be looking at, instead of $5 million in 12-13, we'd be looking at about $9 million total in 12-13?
A little bit less, but it's right now calculated around $3.3 million takeaway from us. It actually would hit our budget if it goes according to history. They will assign the penalty to us 1 year in arrears because we're basic aid. So that $3.3 million will come out of the year 2013-14. Revenue limit districts will have to do, according to history and practice, a mid-year cut if it doesn't pass in November. But basic aid districts have traditionally been given a 1 year grace period in order to make the adjustments. So, and anything's possible. They might say, okay, you got to pay this year, and then we'll have to scramble to either find or cut an equivalent amount of money.
Other questions from board members at this point? Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I wanted to thank Julie and Mr. Miller, because this is was very easy to understand and work with, and I appreciate it. One of the things in reviewing the budget, and I think it's important for us to note, at the very end, there was a section that was called categoricals. Yeah. And I was looking through this, and the first one that caught my attention was arts and music block grant. And so I called today and I said, well, what's the status with this? What are we doing? How much was this worth? And then started going down this list. And Eric, if you want, I'm sorry, Russell, do you want to explain, or if Julie wants to explain what these two pages really mean and how much of a cut it's been to us?
Well, the categorical programs have been recharacterized by the state of California in the recent past. So up until about 4 years ago, they were restricted programs, and they had specific uses for their money. And then they became by and large, they became unrestricted. And as an example, the Arts and Music Block Grant has a and then there's another characteristic. As a basic aid district, we've lost tremendous numbers of these programs to the state as our fair share of pain. Since they don't give us any money except categorical money, they can't really take anything back from us when they cut the deficit factor by 22.2% on revenue limits. They take our categorical programs. And it's amounted to $4.3 million this year that they took back. And the Arts and Music Block Grant is a great example. It's, I think, $96,000 or some such number. But we haven't received any of it in the last 3 or 4 years. We've been supporting it with what we call encroachment from the general fund, allowing it to be used in the purpose for which it was originally intended, but paying for it with general fund dollars. And you can go down some of these that we've done such work with, like GATE, the Pierce PAR, the Phys Ed Teacher Incentive. All of these programs have been allowed to continue in existence with general fund dollars. And so I think that's what you were getting at, is that $4.5 million of this categorical funding has gone back to the state, some billions of dollars, and cut their deficit by just one day. Well, then they fell in love with this method, and now they defer up to 6 months some of the apportionments that districts are supposed to get. What it does, it puts the districts in a cash flow bind with the potential of not having enough money in May or June to pay payroll because the state has withheld its apportionments and they don't have cash. So they have to go out and borrow money, which puts an additional expenditure burden on their budgets. Deferrals are not so much our problem. Some deferrals of some of the money that we get happens, but it's not so much as to cause us a pain. But revenue limit districts not only don't get any money, what money they're supposed to get is being withheld on periodic basis.
And I guess my question was,
that the deferrals are not part of the share of pain, right?
That's correct.
That because there's an assumption that they're going to be paid back at some time in the future.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Generally, the deferrals are anywhere from 3 days to 3 or 4 months,
right,
in a period of time. So it's all about cash flow for the state. They don't have the money sometimes to pay the district, so they withheld it.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions from board members? Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anybody from – I don't know if I went to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a resolution. Well, since I'm not getting any takers, I'll move approval of item number 9.01, the adoption of the 2012-2013 budget.
And I'd be honored to second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion from board members? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 9.02, declaration of need for fully qualified educators. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we have to do each year is to declare to the state that we have fully qualified educators. And so what you have before you is basically kind of a document that just states that just in case we have teachers that we need to hire who do not have their CLAD certificate, or we have a teacher who may be in an intern situation. Sometimes, you know, you're not supposed to touch it. You can tell, you know, how it goes to my stuff. Okay. We also have the case at certain times where we may have a particular position, especially in the special ed realm, a very hard to fill position, where we may need somebody to actually be hired on an internship credential should we not have those people available in terms of not applying for a position. So the district has done an outstanding job of getting our CLAD numbers to where they are today. So basically our English learner authorizations, as you can see, it was down to 6 teachers in our entire district that are working on that and should be completed by October of this year. So the only reason why we kind of put this forward is that, and for the most part, to let you know, we do screen out most candidates. They do not have a CLAD credential now. If they do, or some equivalent of their ELD, SDI training, those types of things. So if they don't have those certificates, we normally screen them out. But should we have a physics opening from, you know, and a candidate from outside the state of California who doesn't meet those criteria, then this would allow us to hire them. They would then get an emergency CLAD credential and then be asked to make sure that they get that certification done within a year to 2 years max. So that's basically what you have before you.
Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a resolution on this?
I move approval of item number 9.02, declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Millar. And I would just point out that this is really pretty impressive when we think, what, not even 2 years ago, we had, 40 at least people on this. So this is really, really great stuff and really speaks well for our staff. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 9.03, proposed new board policy on campus security. Mr. Robinette.
I got my wireless thing here. I don't know if I've just lost my information, though. There it is. Okay. Thank you. We have 5 board policies that we've kind of delayed a little bit, and so we're going to bring them all in front of you tonight. at our high schools, especially in off hours, we'll have video cameras up. And so we answer the question, yes, of course. And do you have a policy about that? And no, we don't have a policy about that. And in fact, it's very rare to find any board policies about that. We thought maybe we should have one. The Supreme Court actually ruled many years ago, they used the term reasonable expectation of privacy. Where there is no reasonable expectation of privacy, public entities can certainly film and certainly use video surveillance. And that's probably why you don't see a policy very many places. I actually pulled this language and kind of worked with it from a school district in San Diego. None of the school districts in our county have a video surveillance policy that we could find. But basically, where there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, we can use video cameras to film activities. Interestingly enough, you can't use audio recording in public places. Audio recording is considered wiretapping, and wiretapping is against the law, at least without just cause and the subpoena and all those kinds of things. I think we had a president who wasn't sure about that. But we have this is mainly used for security measures for after hours, and that's really the only reason we use video surveillance. It is put this in public places. There's certainly no video surveillance in bathrooms or locker rooms or classrooms for that matter. Teachers have the right not to have their classrooms filmed, so they're not used in classrooms. We have always been posting this information in our parent handbook over the years, even without a policy, but that's written into this language. And we wanted to make sure we put language in the end that we would be cooperating with police if necessary to look at videotapes, and that to the degree that we keep the video recordings, which I don't think we typically do, they could constitute a public record, so we'd be cooperating with all entities with public records too. So this is a maybe a little bit of an unusual policy, but we thought that it would probably be important to kind of codify what we would be doing with video surveillance. So I'm available for questions.
Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I think it's a good policy. I particularly think that it's good to post signs. That helps improve the factual basis for the non-expectation of privacy. My question is there any routine review of the video, or is it episodic? Maintenance notices damage to the exterior, and they go back and look at the video?
Usually the case. It's not a regular review. I would think that our principals or assistant principals or deans or whatever would look at the tapes if there's vandalism.
And are the ARs in place for this picture?
We have not written ARs for this. And actually, I think the policy itself is pretty... It might suffice.
Well, one of the things that struck me about it is the ubiquitous nature of video cameras causes there to be some unusual requests for video from. And for me, I have a boat fire case up in Portland, and the boat just happened to be trailered past the Yahoo campus, which is festooned with video cameras, apparently. So the fire investigation people were able to get video of this boat being trailered past down the road on fire. So that may be one consideration. How do we handle requests from some third party. Who is basically fishing to see if there's some kind of record evidence of some event? But otherwise, I think it's an excellent policy, and I'm glad to see we have the video surveillance, because as I think everyone is aware, that sometimes you get these outbreaks of school vandalism that can be quite expensive.
Hi, I think this may go to Mr. Millar's comments. If we're looking down to the second to last paragraph, Rick can, and I don't know, just read out some changes and see how you feel about them, and then we'll go from there. So to the extent that any images from the district surveillance system create a student or personnel record, the superintendent or designee shall ensure that the images are, and I'd like to suggest that we add, are confidential and can only be assessed, retained, and disclosed in accordance in the rest of the paragraph. I feel that the word confidential may help, but I don't know if you...
I don't know. I think I'm going to ask for a reaction from
one of our lawyer board member, if you have any. I'm sorry, Walter. No, I just I don't know. Is there any?
Well, I guess what I would say, and this is based more on just my flawed knowledge of the English language, is that the images are accessed, retained, and disclosed in accordance with law, board policy, administrative regulation, or collective bargaining agreement.
Includes the word confidential, even though it's systematic, and it does have meaning in code. So in this case, that the images of a student would be protected and possibly protected from a situation of, I don't know, a student with a boat on fire. As long as it's not a Mastercraft. I just throw that out there.
So confidential and can only be accessible.
Yeah, and again, it's up to the board. It's just a concept.
I can certainly make that adjustment.
Okay, is there any other comment from board members on this? So there was a recommendation by Mr. Buckman, and we'll just look and see how the board feels, if there's consensus on adding the word confidential. At which point, Mark?
That images are confidential
and can only be
accessed.
Okay. Would everybody be okay with that? Ellen, are you okay with that? Jim? Okay. So Mark, do you want to make a motion?
Thanks. I'd like to make a motion that we add in the second to last paragraph, about halfway through, ensure that the images are confidential and can only be accessed, retained, and disclosed in accordance with law.
Okay. And would somebody like to second that?
Second.
Mr. Quisenberry seconds it. Any further discussion from board members? Seeing that, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carry 6-0.
I'll move adoption of board policy 3515 as modified.
3515. Okay. I think we just did that. Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve proposed board policy 3515 as modified. Any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carry 6-0. Okay, let's move on to item number 9.04.
Thank you. This is an existing board policy on student conduct, and the impetus for this, for the substantial change in this, really came from Project Citizen work from Pacific Beach High School last year, which had to do with cell phone use in classrooms. So it's been a year in the making, but we actually have that change here. But while we were looking at the conduct section, we also looked at changes recommended by the California School Boards Association in other areas, and they're reflected here. So I just want to point out the four changes in this policy. On the first opening paragraph, we better defined what at school means according to Ed Code, because it really wasn't clear in our given definition. And at school, of course, includes going and coming from school during lunch period, going and coming from school-sponsored activities. So we wanted to make sure we had that definition clear in our opening paragraph. So that's one change. Going down the line, we also put a change in our section on cyberbullying, and this is one that is still being, you know, tossed around in the courts a great deal. I'm sure there's, you know, it's what constitutes a substantial disruption is you know, heavily litigated. But we did want to make sure we included the language that said a student may be disciplined for off-campus conduct if it causes a substantial disruption, and this usually refers to the kind of things that students are doing on the internet or through Facebook accounts or texting that could cause disruptions in the school day. We're pretty careful about those kinds of things because students have their own free speech rights, and many of these things fall within civil litigation areas and aren't necessarily school issues. But that changes in there. If you look at the page 9.04.4. This is where we made the change to our to what we are referring to as cellular phones or other personally owned devices. I think that's the common term used now, personally owned devices. And that basically the change here is that we are now recommending the use of cell phones or personally owned devices at the discretion of the teacher and at the discretion of the school, you know, depending on the setting and the situation. So I can we certainly know that there may be times when a school would say, you know, it's elementary school, it's recess, we don't want you sitting around, you know, playing on the internet, go play. So there could be school rules that apply, but also in the classroom there are certainly opportunities where a teacher could say, pull out your scientific calculator or your personally owned device that has a scientific calculating app on it, and we're going to use it, and other times where it's appropriate to put it away. So that's really what that section is about. And then I'll just, the only other change is on the last page, 9.04.
Suspicion basis for search and seizure?
Yes. Okay. Not probable cause, reasonable suspicion. And
that's been
And we, generally speaking, kind of discourage going to searching through students' private things. But if there's a nexus to the actual event they're being, you know, called in for, then it's certainly fair game under reasonable suspicion.
And I definitely appreciate the last entry where we're trusting our school site folks to make the best outcome rather than imposing some kind of must expel or must suspend language.
Mark?
Yes, thank you. This is more of just a question. Within the policy before there were changes, it says students are encouraged to submit a verbal or written complaint. And Rick, there was a discussion, I can't remember how many years ago, about, I'm sorry, 5.3, the third paragraph.
Okay.
And this, are we still supplying, or do students still have access to an anonymous tip line or a way to get their complaints anonymously?
Yes, we still use
that's
the
important.
Yeah, we still use the WeTip, actually, as our call-in.
Okay, so just for those out
right
there.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry.
I'm looking at page 9.04.4, the last paragraph, which sort of answered a question I had, but I just, do we see these being developed, well, it says per site, but are we going to do some ARs or some general guidelines for the cell phone policy? Or
This is actually trying to make sure our conduct section matches what we've already done with our the internet, the acceptable
right
use technology okay use policy. So we both have board policies and ARs that refer to that with regard to personally owned devices. So we've already actually developed those.
And I do want to commend the fact that students shall receive regular instruction regarding district and school rules and regulations related to conduct, and also I'm assuming this is conduct in the use of their personal electronic devices.
Correct.
Okay, and I have one question. In the second paragraph on the first page where it talks about behavior is considered appropriate, I have a question about, we talk about diligent in study, neat and clean.
I'm
uncomfortable with neat and clean.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
what
that means.
We didn't make any other changes besides just one, but that's still in this. I don't know what neat and clean mean either. If the board wants to kind of get rid of that, it's absolutely fine.
I think we should shoot high and expect neatness and cleanness. So.
I'm okay with it. It just seems to me that it's hard to define.
I don't think our ARs try to define neat and clean anywhere either. So,
okay, so I guess my question is, would the board be comfortable deleting the words neat and clean? Because I think it's unenforceable. It's pretty objective. I mean, subjective, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Leave it to be, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you know it when you see it, you know. How would the board support that?
My comment is, though, occasionally, even at the high school level, we do have to encourage a student to bathe a little more regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Maybe mm-hmm. wash their clothes, you know, a little bit more frequently. So just a comment. I'm not sure where that comes down, but does happen.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. Does that preclude really hygiene, which is what you're talking about, yes. I think.
Mm-hmm. This is a student conduct policy, so yeah. I don't think that precludes the schools taking interest in students, you know, health and hygiene.
And typically, when we approve board policy, we want it to be broader. So I guess that may be somewhat archaic language, but I think the intent is still valuable. How do you modernly say neat and clean? I don't know. So I guess I favor leaving it in just because we want our board policy to be broader, and then they can figure out in the ARs what that really means at the student level, and we want it to be somewhat nebulous to leave the discretion at the site level, I think. And as Jim pointed out, at the teacher level too.
Yeah, I'm certainly not willing to die on this. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I did shower this morning. I changed my clothes. Mark?
Is Ms. Holmes, do you know if there is another board policy that addresses, or would this come under dress code? Or
so this is a one-word change, or two-word changes, I guess, to an existing board policy on head lice to be in keeping with all the current medical practice and Nurses Association and Centers for Disease Control and all those groups, which basically eliminates the idea that you should exclude students from school just for the presence of nits as opposed to nits or lice. The term nitpicking actually comes from the whole lice thing, the etymology of it all. What's currently acceptable in the medical community is that only the presence of lice or live eggs, which are nits that are not hatched yet, which would be right next to the scalp, are the reasons you would exclude a student from school. But just the presence of dead nits, which kind of travel on the hair follicle and might be found, not close to the scalp, no evidence of lice other than those dead nits, you should not be excluding students from school. So this policy is to reflect that, to just say that if lice are found, and this would assume... Yes, you would. I don't deal with this. I'm just bringing it. That's the change.
Did you say etymology or entomology in this one?
Isn't the etymology of words? Yeah, entomology.
The etymology,
right,
of words. There you
yes,
go. It is. I wanted to make sure we were talking about words, not bugs.
That's right.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion? Okay, would someone like to make a motion?
I'd move approval of the changes to board policy 5141.33.
And I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, I think. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to our next item, and I'm trying to figure out how to, that was good, get this here, and that would be proposed new board policy for preschool, and are you handling that one too?
I will, take it.
Okay.
But I know that Mrs. Shields is right behind me to help me out here. So these are two kind of boilerplate board policies based on CSBA recommendations for both preschool, and the next one has to do with transitional kindergarten. We've been running a preschool for half of the year and transitional kindergarten throughout the year, but we have not had a specific board policy for those. So we've basically lifted CSBA language, made it adaptable to us, kept it pretty generic. So it is generic in nature, and ARs are developed to be more specific. But even though we are targeting preschools for the underserved in our community, we do have leeway within the policy if we ever wanted to go to serving more students or, some other basis. But basically, this policy covers our desire to collaborate with community programs, just what our own program would be, what it's based on, and And that's about it. So questions about any specific sections on here? It's a fairly generic policy.
Anyone from the public like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, I just want clarification on board policy 5148.3 and page 9.06.2. We already collaborate with things such as the state preschool and Head Start. Is that correct? And
yes.
We also have leased to some private schools property at school sites like the Old Pacheco and
yes.
Sunnyside and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
And this would apply to our preschool, though, this board policy.
This board policy is only for our own preschool. Okay. The fact that we collaborate with community programs both in our lease agreements and actually free rent when it comes to the state preschool is part of what we do. But I think it's important to note that as we established our preschool program at our sites and we'll be continuing that next year, we have spent quite a bit of time collaborating with private preschools, local agencies to make sure that it's fully understood what we're trying to do, which is not rob students from preschools, but serve those students who are not accessing preschool at this time.
May I ask for further clarification? Are we going to look at we're looking at this separate from the board policy for transitional kindergarten? Or
yes, they're two separate policies.
I'll wait for that one then.
Okay. Mr. Millar.
And I'm not sure whether the question is best for this policy or the next one, but Amy's here, and that's good. I was recently having cake with a retired and retiring elementary teachers about 20 minutes ago.
Pardon. But it's very much a developmental program.
Right. And just a comment. I've talked to both of the TK teachers. And the impression I get from them is that the transitional kindergarten looks like what kindergarten used to be. So it's a lot more play-based with thematic units and things like that. Is that not correct? Sorry, Mrs. Shields.
I actually spoke with a parent about this today, and we went kind of back and forth about, is it play-based, is it not? It's play-based with purpose, and I think that's an important part of it. And when you walk through one of our TK or preschool classes, and if you ask the teacher, what are they doing, they can tell you, well, they're playing with Play-Doh. And the reason they're playing with Play-Doh is to develop their fine motor skills. And you see them working in a cooperative group because we're developing their abilities and they're learning to get along with each other. So everything they do is, they have a really good time in there, but it has a purpose to it.
Right. I think the description is that play is the work of children.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mr. Buckman.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I wanted to add
sorry,
that.
Sorry, Dr. Rogers.
I just am delighted to see this policy here. I just think it's the most meaningful step that we can take toward closing the achievement gap, starting at that age, and for all of our children to become competitive with the rest of the world in terms of our education, getting an early start. It's critical. So this is wonderful. And may I make a motion?
Absolutely.
Okay, then I would like to move that we adopt proposed new board policy 5148.3.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 9.07, and this is the TK policy.
Again, fairly generic language to describe what it is we've been doing. This also includes on page 9.07.2 our rollout plan, which is consistent with the rollout plan that the state adopted, how you will phase in transitional kindergarten. And I think the important thing about TK, as we call it, is that it really constitutes a two-year kindergarten program for those students who have not yet reach the age level as we're rolling it out. Within our transitional kindergarten program, we are having space available for other students that don't fit into the exact criteria by that that month of the year, so we're filling our classes. And I think if you were to visit our transitional kindergartens or our preschools, for that matter, you'd be really pleased with what you're seeing there. So, again, fairly generic language about the eligibility, the curriculum, the staffing for our TK program.
Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman?
Quick question. I'm on the old agenda item because I had my notes on it, so I'm on 8.3, which I believe is the second to last page. Second paragraph down, transitional kindergarten students may be placed in the same classroom as kindergarten students. And I guess this is just to Amy. We're talking mostly, I think, about having a separate classroom for the transitional children.
That is our model and that is our hope, but in these times of budgets, the possibility of a combination classroom is there.
And so is that going to be workable? I mean, I've visited some kindergarten classrooms that are kind of, you know, hard to track one student running across.
Well, our goal is to support the transitional kindergarten model, but again, you know, if you were to ask any teacher, does a combination classroom work? Yes. It can work.
Thank you.
Mine's just an observation. The state passed this and enabled us to do this, but am I correct in my understanding that they haven't provided any additional monies for it?
Correct.
That is correct.
Walter?
I just wanted to, I noticed the two-year limitation for transitional kindergarten total for a student. Is that practical and workable based on, I guess it's based on when they're allowed to enter the transitional?
Yes, I think it is very practical and reasonable, because if there would be thoughts after 2 years that and the TK part of it is 1 year. It's the first year of a 2 year kindergarten program. So after that first year in transitional kindergarten, the child moves on to kindergarten. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And typically, we don't, I mean, do we hold children back in kindergarten? My brother was held back in kindergarten, but it was a long time ago.
In an attempt to be brief, the research on
kids being able to start kinder without having to do another year of preschool.
Absolutely, with fully credentialed teachers.
With fully credentialed teachers, mm-hmm. For sure. Other comments from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back then. Would somebody like to make a motion?
I'll move approval of board policy 6170.1.
Okay, we have a motion for 6170.1 by Mr. Malarn. Who would like to second that? Seconded by Ms. Quisenberry. Is there any further board discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to have an item pulled. Item number 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 10.02, acceptance of donations. Item number 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 10.04, approval of purchase orders. 10.05, approval of warrants and payroll. And 10.06, approval of summer field trips. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on these items? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Okay.
So I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Sheffer to approve items 10.01 to 10.06. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to the advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to have something for the advanced agenda? Mr. Millar.
If I may, I brought it up before about the board discussing positions on propositions that relate to school funding. I attended with these two gentlemen right here. And Ryan Pinkerton, the County Office of Ed presentation on the governor's proposal and the Molly Munger PTA, the Munger-Mockler PTA proposal. And I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is I think we should look at moving that discussion forward as soon as we can, because it's a complicated area regarding both the board taking a position and then what things the board members as individual citizens are allowed to do to propose, you know, to advocate for a particular position. And frankly, if we don't, you know, if we're as individual citizens are not really intent on advocating for a position, then I'm not sure we need to go through the exercise. However, having said that, I do think we have an opportunity to bring the discussion in a balanced, equal way forward for the public to be able to hear it. And we may want to explore other forums for public participation and understanding the pros and cons of both measures without taking an advocacy position, and then having board members and staff understand clearly what is permissible as far as individuals advocating.
Mark? I'm very supportive. I'd like to get that going, and I agree with Mr. Millar.
I would agree with that, too. So I guess, is this something that that you're thinking? I'm not sure exactly what it specifically format you'd like that to take. Could you maybe help out with that?
I hadn't really thought it through that far, and I'm still trying to process what we learned yesterday from the presentation at COE. The emphasis seemed to be that if the board and the district is going to present information, it has to be balanced, fair and balanced, if you will. And we have to have ample opportunity for both views, or whatever, maybe more than two views, for opposing views and supporting views to be presented in a kind of in a fair kind of way. So my concern is that with the viewership of our recorded board meetings, I think it's 10 of us that watch, it may not be the best way to get information out to the community about these things. One of the proposals that was discussed is the League of Women Voters have been involved in this aspect of things, too. So it may be as simple as making sure our parents and community members and caregivers for our students know about the League of Women Voters presentations. Typically, they're televised and recorded and televised, too. So it could be something as straightforward as that. The separate piece is the board making its own determination about what we want to do about positions on propositions. And the board is, as I understood it from the presentation yesterday, is allowed to take a position.
A personal stand. Right. And I'm guessing, as can I say, I'm taking the stand as Mark Buckman, a board member. And so I'm interested also in sort of some education on that, and I'm not sure where that would come from.
That was one of the more nettlesome issues, was the use of your title, board trustee title, and it centered around a similar discussion that we had during our retreat, where sometimes you don't use it. You might write a letter to the editor or whatever, and the newspaper uses it to identify you. So there is a distinction between using your position to be identified and advocating as a trustee. And what their recommendations centered around was being clear that when you're offering an opinion in public, that you're speaking as an individual, not for the board. So in that kind of, I don't think it's overly complicated. It's just more of heightened awareness of the things to avoid more than anything else.
So if maybe that came in writing rather than as part of that discussion, I would truly like to be able to review that.
I think we're talking about two separate things here. One, and actually I think it's more of almost a general discussion you're talking about, Walter, and that is we have approved resolutions supporting different activities up in Sacramento, for example. My understanding, as you say, is that we cannot use school district or board resources as a board to advocate for those positions other than passing a resolution, which is our opinion. So there's that education piece, what should we, could we be doing? And I think that actually not only for these initiatives, that could have some broader implications for us if we choose to advocate for local issues as well. Benefit the school district itself. So I think that's one issue. But also, I think, can we as a school district provide a forum for information only on two initiatives that could have very significant effects, passing or not passing, on school district finance throughout California?
I believe that we can. I was just going to point out, too, that School Services of California, Ron Bennett made part of the presentation, and they are going to have it up on their website. They said at least for a month or so. It might take them through this week to get it up, but the presentation, the PowerPoints, and then one of the handouts, I have those as well, and perhaps we could make arrangements to distribute it to the board, but that would definitely be worth the viewing. It took about an hour and a half for the presentation and involved a lawyer from Fagan and Fuller, I think it is. And the Ron Bennett spent a lot of time on the financial pieces. He gave a little legal advice too, but and then the attorney provided some of the insights into the restrictions and things that were permissible. So it's definitely worth your time.
Thank you for taking the time. Dr. Prater, do you feel like you have enough direction here?
Yeah, and Kim and I spoke today. We're working on putting this together for the board on Friday notes. It's the information that Mr. Millar is speaking of is really excellent. It's an excellent and balanced approach of looking at both sides, both initiatives, and as well as the legal position that we need to be concerned about. So I was planning on putting that together for the Friday notes. Also, I have my final PTA leaders meeting this Thursday, and I was going to share the documents without taking any particular position, but just share the information that I got, and that's this Thursday at 9 in the morning. So I would certainly be willing also to speak with the League of Women's Voters and ask them if they would be willing to host such an event, and we could. The other piece I was wondering is maybe this would be a good topic of the board retreat in July.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking and see if this would work for the board, that if you could present something in the Friday notes which you're talking about doing, and then we could bring this back at the next board meeting and see, because we usually what we would do is to agendize something, we would all have to agree on it, you know, take a vote on it, so we could have a plan that we could actually vote to bring back for the presentation. Would that work for everybody? Is that okay? Jim, does that work for you? Okay, so Eric, with that, okay, cool. Are there any other board members who want to come forward with advanced agenda items? Okay, seeing none. Let's move on to the ROP report, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. ROP continues to be interesting. Jed Brington, and I'm going to just do this by the numbers instead of the names. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 State Skills USA winners, and looks like 4 state FFA winners, which is, considering the size of our county, is just phenomenal and a compliment to our teachers and our program. Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 12.02, reports by board members. Who'd like to begin? Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, I had the opportunity to participate in the Morro Bay High School Career Day. I was a member of a panel that included two women engineers, one structural and one civil, a dentist, a bank president, and myself. And it was all coordinated with, by Betty Ayotte and Casey Cohen, the co-career center. What's the word I want to use here? Directors, I don't know. Technicians, career technicians. Thank you.
Mrs. Holmes. Anyway, it was very interesting. We each got a certain number of minutes to present, and then the students were to ask us questions. I did advocate that more young men join the profession. I think the latest figure I got it's 76% female profession, and it was interesting. The following week or something, there was an article in the business section of the Tribune about men moving into careers that were considered traditionally female careers. And the example, I think one of their examples was nursing. So at any rate, it was very well done. The students were, behavior was excellent, and they asked some very interesting questions, mainly of the engineers, not so much of the school teacher. But anyway, that's it for me. Thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I would just like to commend Frank Warren for another successful 24-hour relay, 21, I think. This was the 21st annual 24-hour relay, and it was a cold one. This was the fifth year I've been doing this, and I happened to not spend the night this time, and boy, was that a good choice. It was really very cold, but very successful, and always a tremendous community event. I can hear it from my house, you know, down the street as well, so I participate when I'm home, too. Also, I just want to congratulate Morro Bay High School and Los Osos Middle School bands for that wonderful performance at the PAC. They're tremendous, as always, and quite sophisticated and dramatic presentation this year. And also, the Slow High Tiger Fest was really, like, it was like Thursday night market of an academic institution. It was really surprising and fun and just a great inclusive event. And to bring the teachers out of the classroom down to the street level so that everyone who walked in could visit with them was a wonderful idea and very engaging. And also, I just wanted to thank some Morro Bay High School teachers who had lunch with me, and also some Slo High School teachers who had lunch, and thank Dan Andrus and Mr. O'Connor for arranging those. And I think that's it.
Helen.
I attended the San Luis Obispo High School performance of the play Hair a couple of weeks ago, and it was really fun. It was interesting to and because I still know some of the kids at the high school, to talk to them about, you know, their experience in performing that play. I also stopped by the 24-hour relay and went to the C.L. Smith Carnival this past Friday with one of my alumni children. My 21-year-old son went back to his old stomping grounds and visited the carnival with me, which made it really fun for him to. He hadn't been back in a long time, and he recalled many more tables at the lunchroom, and they were bigger then. Now there are fewer and they're smaller, and the drinking fountains are so short. How can anyone get a drink out of those drinking fountains? So it was very special to be back there and see many of the teachers and see that great event, and it was well done. So happy to participate in all these year-end fun activities.
Okay, Mark.
I was happy to attend the Del Mar, Baywood, and Laguna back-to-school nights. They were great. The classrooms were great. I also want to thank the custodial staff because the schools looked.
And so Friday, I and several of the board members from the local area will be visiting Cacho Asajan. And some of the things we'll be talking to them about are the manipulation of Proposition 98 and asking the legislature not to mess with Prop 98. Of course, the budget, the weighted student formula, and I think a real important one that we haven't seen much of, but it is a gigantic issue in California, is the proposal to allow charter schools to use our facilities at no charge to us. And it would, I think, especially about what we do with our three campuses and the income that provides us and the community services that provide. I mean, at Sunnyside School, for example, a large percentage of that rental, as I think everybody knows, is from Cal Fire, which provides training opportunities for firefighters in California. We might have to give those things up to charter schools if they applied under this at no cut, and we would receive no revenue from that. So I think that's something that we need to keep our eyes on as well. Is there anybody else here that would like to add anything? Otherwise, we'll adjourn this meeting. Our next meeting is June 26th back here. Thank you very much.